Hello, this is Roland Larson, and Doris and I have just returned from Holden Village in June and early July of 1991. Today is July 12th, 1991, and while at the village we were part of the reunion group that came together of former faculty and staff, and that was a lot of fun. And one of the things that happened was people were reflecting on lots of memories from their experiences at the village. And Bill Dirks asked if we could prepare a tape which would get at some of the memories that a few of us have had. And this seemed to be an opportunity because tonight we're together with Lucy and Bill Hume and Irene and Merton Strumman, and we're at Bill's house, and just want to see what kind of memories we might resurrect here off the top of our heads. So here we are now, and I have Mert Strumman sitting here at my left, and Merton Strumman was one of the original people at Holden. Mert, when did you first come there, and do you have some early thoughts of those early years?
Well, my first view of Holden Village was to see an assortment of pictures that Gil Berg had brought to a convention that we had at St. Olaf College. I believe it must have been in late August. And he said he wanted to talk to me. My guess would be 1960. And he said to me, "Mert, I want to show you the biggest thing that's happened in my life." And then he went on to show me the pictures and to say that this Holden Village had been given to LBI, and they just did not have the wherewithal to handle it, so they had turned it over to a feasibility committee from the American Lutheran Church, and he was the chairman of that committee. And he said, "Mert, it's the biggest thing that is," he said, "I don't know what to do with it." And I said, "Well, I'm going to be out there in September for a workshop, and why don't we plan to go out and see it?" So following the workshop that we held at LBI, he drove us up to Holden Village, and we came to this very deserted place and lamented the fact that it was being systematically pilfered, because people knew that people who had been there as miners had gotten the sudden word of the place being closed, and they had absolutely picked up and left, so that in some of the cabins we saw that plates were still on the table. There was still furniture in some of the places, and things on the hanging on the line. So obviously they had exited quickly, I imagine hoping to get to a place for a job. Meanwhile, people with their horses had come up to Holden Village and had loaded them with blankets and equipment, and they were ransacking the place. And, of course, that was a sad sight, and the place had been now vacant for some time. And in looking at it, I said to Gil Berg, I said, "You know, that could become a marvelous center for gathering of young adults." And as I left Seattle, flew back to Minneapolis, I went to Green Lake in Wisconsin, where we had a gathering of all the youth directors. And at that time, it was at the end of our project, and I was sharing with them the first reports on our Lutheran Youth Research Project. And one of the things that I did was to show them the pictures, slides, and tell them about Holden Village. And the group got very excited about it, particularly Wilton Bergstrand. And this was near the end of his tenure as the youth director for the Augustana Synod, and this became a project that energized him. And he then determined he was going to raise the money for refurbishing the place and for getting young adults to go out there and clean up the place. And the end result of that gathering of youth directors was that different people volunteered to do different things, but Berge just was willing to carry the ball. So that's how the thing got started.
Irene, what were you saying?
I was remembering that it was in 1961 in August, I think, that Mert flew out to Holden Village again and went on a horse hike that was kind of a memorable one for him out in sort of surveying the whole area of Holden.
Is there anything you want to say about that one, Mert?
Well, it was memorable, and one of the things you remember for the rest of your life. We were outfitted with horses by a person from Stehekin who came down with horses for Bergstrand, myself, Gil Berg, and I think one other. And we then proceeded with our guide, who had all the equipment on another horse, so that we hiked into the... Actually, we were on horses for about 3 days, and I can recall when we got off the horse the last time, Bergstrand said, "After riding on a horse for 3 days, I've discovered I'm much better off." But there were a couple of events there that could have been fatal. We were on the narrow, we were going along, and Bergstrand, who was always cracking jokes, was not the world's best horse rider, and didn't realize that the cinch around the horse had gotten loose, and so he fell off his horse onto rocks. Not long later, we came to a very narrow place where we had to meet a hunting party that were coming with a number of horses, and they were laden with their packs, and we had to then get up sort of on the side of the mountain, and while we did that, my horse got excited and started to jump around, and it was rock, and the fear was that he would slide off the cliff on down the side of the mountain. So the guide was able to come up to him and settle him down. Well, by that time, there was a nervousness among the horses. And after that party had gone, then we started to get on our horses. And Bergstrand, again, not the world's greatest horseman, started to get on his horse. He had one foot in the stirrup, and the horse started to move. And he couldn't quite get his other leg up because the horse was moving faster and faster. And if there had not been another horse up ahead that forced that horse to stop, Bergstrand might have been dragged by his foot, because he was just about ready to lose his balance and to be dragged. And just by the fortune of another horse being there, it was prevented. And I had a new healthy respect for the danger of riding horses in the mountains. Twice there could have been fatalities. Then we got to Stehekin and left our horses and took a boat and came back to Holden Village.
How did you get up? I think you've talked also about how you got up from the dock up there the first time. What did you ride in?
Oh. Yeah, that was the way in which people were brought up to Holden from the dock. There was a flatbed truck, and I think it had a rope around that people might hang on, but it was not one that would hold. And we had this hair spin or hair whatever road, and people, some of them were so frightened that one of them decided that they would not ride on that truck going down the hill again, and walked all the way from the top down to the dock. And there were, however, no fatalities, and everybody seemed to manage, but a few hung on very tight.
Mert, was that the one Dave Brown was on also? He was youth director,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Right, he was one of the youth directors. I presume that he would have, because that was sort of the initiation to Holden. If you could stand that, you could stand anything. It was a frightening thing. And then I was on the board, the first board, and the first chairman of our board was Vern Reike, who, of course, at that time was law professor at the University of Washington and came at his role with the discipline of a lawyer, and he was able to do an excellent job. And we, at that time, tried to have three representatives from each of the different church bodies so that we tried to make this an all Lutheran kind of event. I can recall being at Holden Village those early years, and we had a lot of young adults. And I can recall we went on a hike, and there were 36 or 37 of us on that hike. And as we hiked up the mountains towards the top, Lyman Lake, towards Lyman Lake. When we got up there, it first of all got cold, then it started to rain, then it started to snow. And there was no alternative but we would have to bed down in that trapper's cabin. And of course, to get 36 people into a little cabin for one or two people was something. So what we did was we carried out the table, the stove, and everything. And then people were laid side by side. And then there was a ladder across the top, and people were laid up there. And after a while, we finally had everybody in a prone position. And it was warm inside that cabin. It was the only place to be. And we thought we were going to go to sleep. And discovered that this was the abode, Saturday evening dance hall for the mice. And they started going up and down the ceiling and the walls, and pretty soon they started going across and get caught in your hair, and you could tell which mouse was going because you'd hear a squeal, and the squeal would go progressively from one side to the other. And that's how we lived out that evening, and next morning went and finished our hike.
Bert, what was the vision that some of you had in those early years, you know, like 1960, yeah. 61?
Yeah.
How did that look to you then? What did you want to happen? What was your dream?
Oh, the dream was a clear-cut one. It was to become a gathering place for young adults. It was to become the place where young adults would be energized by the faith and would come together, because we youth directors recognized we were reaching high school people, but the young adults were a group not being reached. And so a number of the week sessions were designed to bring in young adults. And there were a lot that came in. And it was striking that when they got into that area of the mountains, it was as though all of their defenses fell apart. And there was counseling going all over the place. And some very deep problems came to the surface. And people like myself and others were counseling so much and were involved with so much ministry that I remember one year I was so tired that when we left Holden Village, we'd gone only a few hours and we checked into a motel and I went to bed. But it was a time of enormous interaction and ministry that was going on.
This is Bill Hume. Told stuff to you, Mert, but I guess I was impressed by the fact that a lay missionary worked hard to get this property and then became part of the staff in the summer. I don't know if he's still there or not.
Oh, he's there. And his name is Wes Preeb, and he has a very unique role still in the village.
Yeah, we were there this month. And Wes is very involved there. He still has his pool hall and the bowling alley and the whole business, and he's very active and doing a really great job, as he has in the past, 30 or more years.
I should add that two things that I particularly remember from Holden Village. We were there with our five sons, and the morning Bible studies conducted by Carol Hinderly sort of energized for the day. And the book of Galatians, of course, was something that came alive. At noon was a time for prayers of the church. And again, this is something that Herr Carroll featured. Then, of course, the volleyball games that followed the dinner. And the dinner was in itself a remarkable experience because we sat around after the meal and started to sing. And Beanie played the piano in his inimical way. And some of the songs that we sang, like the Holden song and others, were very exciting, and they sort of got the group all set to finish off with let's play volleyball. It was a song we sang.
Let's now play volleyball. Come on.
That's it. Right. And then memorable, too, were the evening vespers, the evening services. Those were very memorable times. And it was without a question, it was a time of renewal. It was a time of a spiritual as well as intellectual challenge, because we had outstanding professors there. And so the mind was forced to think and act and reflect and discuss. And then in the evening, it was gathering around the word and the sacrament and the songs of the people. And it for our family, and I'm including now our kids, it was a time of regeneration, refurbishing of they may come with a lot of rebellion and left with a whole different set of values.
Right. It's Lucy Hume here.
I'm just remembering that when we were there the first time, we just stayed a short time, and we met the Larsons for the first time, Doris and Raleigh and their family, and they've become good friends of ours. And then several years later, our youngest son, who hadn't been there, asked, or had been too small really, asked to go back. And so we took our family out there. And I particularly remember that year that we spent a lot of time with Gerhard Frost and I Verne. And Gerhard, of course, was such a wonderful speaker, and I'm sure that everybody remembers some of the wonderful things that he gave there at Holden.
I think that it was, as Mert said, a very important time in the life of our boys. I think they found models that were different from the models back in high school or grade school that had sort of become very important for them. I think they entered into kind of an interaction with both adults and children and youth all together. That was rather unique. And I think in the evening vespers, I could still remember the little kids sitting around in their pajamas. Their folks had gotten them ready, and then they all came down and sat on the floor in the gym. We had the beautiful carving by Arnie Flotten, which may still be there. I don't know. But that was... I felt for myself, I was a mother of five, and I couldn't do too many things, but being at Holden was unique because my meals were made for me, and so that was not part of my concern. I took my first hike up into the mountains when someone stayed with our little guy who was just about a year and a half old, the youngest one, and found I could do that. Some of the beauty of the mountains, the fellowship. We went with the Larsons on and their children and ours on at least a two-day hike, climbed Cloudy Peak, slept under the stars, and had a marten that was very angry at us above in the tree, and a family. He was a cardiac pediatrician from Seattle, Dean. Lola and Phil Dean and their family, we went with them. They had five or six children, I think. And to this day, we have kept contact with each other. There was a real fellowship that developed in family. It was a family experience. I can't say enough about what it did for our older boys that were in a vulnerable age.
And Jean Swihart rode her horse on that trip. Do you remember that? And because she couldn't really hike at that time. And Doris, how about our family? Would you have any comments to make about the impact?
Well, definitely Holden had a great impact on our two boys and our two girls. Some fond and deep memories resulted. Our two girls worked there during the summertime, and Jane met her husband, Mike Wiff, there, and at the urging of a fellow, a friend, one summer, Jane stayed right on through lifestyle, and that has, the friendships during that lifestyle have stayed firm and really helpful to her during the ensuing years. Just lifestyle was an after high school experience where young people stayed through the entire winter months at Holden pursuing various creative and learning sessions dealing with, they kind of made I don't know exactly how to describe it. Can you help me?
No, it was just a tremendous educational experience that broadened their life in many ways and opened all kinds of new windows, I think, in their experience and in their thinking.
Right. I think they learned a lot about themselves and developed in the areas of literature and art and drama and psychology. And what I wanted to say about that is in the past year, our daughter Jane and her husband Mike had a grief experience where their little son, 8-year-old son Tommy, died. And it was a core group of Holden people, I would say, that were of tremendous support during his illness and death. And she treasures those friendships and has kept them through the years.
I think we should mention there, too, John Graber and Elise, who really spearheaded that whole thing and were such lifestyle, who did the lifestyle program and who have been such an influence on our daughter and all kinds of other young people. So, you know, the whole business about friendships, I'm reminded of that being here right now with you people, because like Lucy said, we met the Humes at Holden, and we met the Strummans there, and I remember how I met you, Mert. I don't know if you remember this, but we were going to play volleyball, and you and I were in the same team, but I didn't know you. And Fran Gamelin was there, and Fran Gamelin brought us together, introduced us. Then we played volleyball, and that started a long friendship. And shortly after that, you asked me to join you in the work, and I resigned from my position and joined you. And it changed my life so completely and opened up so many windows and made life so interesting and exciting in so many ways that, you know, I'm just impressed with how these things happen, the movement of the Spirit.
I think you have to say that Carol Hinderly and then particularly Daryl Lundby inspired us to go to Holden in the first place. So they were instrumental in getting us there.
Yes, and we just saw Daryl a couple of weeks ago for the first time in 18 years. And that was really fun to review some of this with him, too, and some of that good old history.
I think the most frustrating thing about Holden is carrying it back home and trying to tell friends and those who have never been to Holden about the special place apart. I know our children were always frustrated trying to explain it to other people. I can remember standing in the library of our church, Westwood Church, here at home, and talking with a fellow who said to me, okay, now tell me about this Holden Village that you're talking about all the time. And so I started to tell him about the people in a particular communion service, and as I was telling him, goosebumps spread all the way up and down my arms. And he said, okay, you can stop there. I know all about Holden Village. So all he had to do was look at the excitement there in my arms, and he knew what Holden Village was all about.
Yeah, that's a common thing that people cannot fully describe what the village is or has been in their lives.
One of the things that I remember in our second visit there were the lectures by Roland Baton, and I can still remember them very well. And he was at that time retired, but full of energy, and as he spoke about the history of the Lutheran Church and Luther and so on.
And I should say he was a gifted cartoonist, so that he could draw caricatures of people. And I remember getting one that he had drawn of me. And of course that was a favorite of his. When someone was speaking, then he would draw pictures of them and then give it to them later.
And I remember him walking up to the Mayan area, because we had a evening vespers up there. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And Roland Bainton, we walked with him up there, and he walked just like nothing at the age of about 85. And I was just amazed how this man could do that. He was in great physical shape.
Another thing I remember for myself was that it was a very interesting experience ecumenically of being together with Lutherans, particularly, I think, Missouri Synod. And I found a fellowship and a wonderful group of people there that had come in for various things, like the counseling session that you had with pastors, wasn't it? They brought their wives, and those are unique. And then also Norman Hobble, who was, among other things, sort of a playwright. And I remember the play, the drama that was put on by people at Holden on Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah. And I don't think that I can ever read Jeremiah without suddenly the vision of the words and of his play. In a big impact.
Hobble played the role of Jeremiah and dressed the part, I think skins or something of that sort, and he made it a big event. And then, of course, there was all the hilarity. There was the dance team, remember? The Rockets, chorus line, that's right. Uh-huh. And then the singing, music was a very important thing. Remember, Dick wrote the Holden song? Dick Wilson wrote. And there was a young, very gifted young man there at that time, Phil Brunel, who wrote the music. And as Dick would sing the melody, then Phil would get the harmonization. And I remember one night, Phil put on a concert there, and for my first time, I heard a pianist play clusters, and where he actually used his fist for playing the clusters on his composition. So he was just a phenomenal person, and has continued going to Holden Village up until recently. I talked to him the other day, plan to have lunch with him shortly, and he mentioned that he finally had to quit going to Holden because he would come away so tired from the many things that would be offered. I think one reason for being tired was not only that the day was so full, but invariably Rudy Edmund had been out fishing, and he always came back with trout. So we had our trout meal in the evening, and those usually started around 10 o'clock, and you went on till the wee hours. And then, of course, next morning the bell rang about 6 o'clock.
So we're really talking now about the early and middle 60s, and this word has come up several times in our conversation here, holy hilarity. Is there anything more you remember about that? Because I think that was one of the key things that many of us are recalling as we sit here tonight. What was that all about?
Well, one of it was celebrating Christmas in the summer, kind of a strange way of handling. Then, of course, was the 4th of July celebration, and we had a parade, and people dressed as they would have been wounded soldiers, and their bandages, and people had all sorts of grotesque things. It was just a picnic to watch this parade of people as characters going down, and the wood one was the fife that carried the flag. And I think just an illustration of some of the holy hilarity that took place.
Uh-huh. How about the saunas? What do you remember about the saunas?
I just wanted to say that's where we met Bill and Lucy Hume in the saunas, and we got more inspiration and fellowship in the saunas sometimes than elsewhere. And here was this man whose writing I had admired for years, and then I first meet him in the sauna.
And here you are now. That's good old dear friends.
It may be the same now as with the sauna, but of course I remember that the sauna that I particularly remember using was right next to the mountain stream that came off the glaciers, and when we were properly heated up, roasted, we went into the stream and came back in again, and after about the third time, there was an exhilaration of the body. It either killed you or you enjoyed it, and the latter was our experience.
Well, and of course the back rubs were the unique and great part of the saunas, and while we were having our backs rubbed, Carol Hinderle was always continually nourishing us with further discussion from a Bible study or some forum that he had led.
Another sauna memory I have is leading a session in the sauna. You know, I usually lead seminars and things in nice places and rooms and things, but here was a sauna, and we actually had the session in the sauna. I thought that was really fun.
At the very beginnings of Holden Village, of course, there were so many things that needed doing, and so one of the requirements was that whether you were a guest or staff, you contributed 1 hour a day for doing some type of volunteer work. So you may be out working in the yard or cleaning up or raking or doing something of that sort. And that was a good leveler so that nobody was highfalutin. Everybody worked doing something.
I remember some of the college students and some of the high school students, too, because our kids were in it, had a chance to do a lot of creative things. I think they called it the lift, was it, or the a place where they would go, and someone who had composed music or singing would have a chance to do it, or poetry. And that was also a very unique experience that the kids had.
The lift and the shaft.
Maybe it's a shaft, was it?
Either one.
Mm-hmm.
And one night they put on a presentation for the entire Holden Village. And the sons and daughters of some of these people, like the Hinderles and Strummans and so on, their sons and daughters put on clothes and acted and talked just like their folks. And that was one of the humorous things, to see yourself lampooned by your own sons and daughters, and they were very accurate.
Last week or two ago, when Doris and I were at the village again, we ran into Gertrude Lenholm on the Lady of the Lake, and we said, there she is, Gertrude Lenholm. And sure enough, it was. We hadn't seen her for a long time, but that brought back all the memories of the Beanie Sings. Do you remember anything else about the Beanie Sings?
I'm trying to think of the song. Is it I Can Feel the Spirit? No. Well, every time I feel the Spirit moving in my heart, I will pray or I will sing. Or that one really would take off when he'd start playing it, and over again.
Gotta sing when the Spirit says sing.
They were very spirited. Ask it and ask. Let's see.
Say that again, Mert.
Well, one of the other favorite songs was taking the verse that said, ask and shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you.
I can just see these memories are stirring in our minds and hearts just by the way our voices are becoming more enthusiastic and louder and more excited.
That's fun, isn't it?
You know, one of the things that we did was we had, in and with the regular program, a youth counseling seminar. And so that brought pastors there. And Bill, I'm sure you must have been there as one of the lecturers, because you were a prominent part of the youth counseling seminar. And I remember also we had then the small groups, and we had a couple of the fellows from the West Coast who were CPEs. Do you recall the names?
No, I can't. But I recall the incidents, and you're right. That was my first time out there. We put on this, you and I together, this youth counseling seminar. And we were out there for some other reason in that area and came into Holden for that event. But I do remember we had those as leaders, but no, I can't remember their names.
Bill, I don't want to embarrass you, but I remember, like Dora said, meeting you the first time and hearing your lectures and thinking that these are some of the most brilliant and deep and meaningful talks that I have ever heard. And I won't ask you to respond to that, but I just wanted to say that. Because I think you made a tremendous contribution out there in some of the programs that you did in those years.
One of the interesting traditions that had been introduced by one of the pastors of the ALC, the old ALC, had to do with those who had been out hiking. And I can recall having been out hiking for, well, I think 2 days, came back really foot sore and tired. And we were met by a group of people at the ballpark, which is just about a quarter of a mile away from Holden. And they picked up our packs and escorted us singing so that we came into the village itself. And we were seated on that wall where all that nice green grass is. And they came out with pans, dish pans, of warm, soapy water and washed our feet. And that was memorable and wonderful.
I think when Mert tells that, that was the hike, too, the one where you had spent that unforgettable night in that hut, and you had come back about as tired and bedraggled as you've ever been. So it must have felt good.
There was a certain pastor then, you're trying to remember,
yes.
His name.
His name, and he was from Texas, or his wife did not go to the same church where he was. He was pastor of a large congregation,
and he had been a scholar and had studied the Middle East and some of their...
His wife was a TV announcer?
Yes. I can't recall his name, and it'll come later.
And Doris, you had something here.
Well, I just wanted to say what a reverence for all of life, and that Lord is the Lord of all life. Was I think our girls especially got an awareness of that, and a deep respect for God's creation as they hiked. We learned a lot about how to, bring our litter back to the village with us and to respect the beautiful flowers and plants and along the way. So that's something that still remains and what made a deep impression on us.
I think easily the character that I remember as being sort of a spirit at Holden was Carol Hinterly. And we've already talked a little bit about Bible studies, but he had a unique way for me of sometimes opening up something in the gospel that just became so fresh and wonderful. And he would often share it in the morning, but he'd share it any time he felt like it. And so it was not exactly what you would expect always, but it came. And I've always been thankful for that.
And when I think of Carol, I often think of a computer. I've tried to explain to people how he will talk sometimes in the speeches and talks he gets. And it's like a computer. He just, one thing reminds him of another, and his mind is just going back and forth and up and down. It's just fantastic to listen to him. I just love it. And a couple of weeks ago, Gertrude Lindholm gave me this quote, and she said it's from Bob Coelho. And it goes like this. She said, Bob Coelho said that listening to a sermon or a lecture by Carol Hinterly is like taking a shower. It is impossible to trace any one stream back to its origin. But when it is done, you know you got wet. And then he goes on to say, well, why go to hear Carol Hinderly preach on Easter sunrise? If you've heard Carol preach, you have heard sunrise.
Yeah, Carol Hinderly would be like that. I would liken him also to a 4th of July pinwheel, where he would sparks would go out in all directions. There was no sense of the linear. Ideas would simply drop in from nowhere, and they were wonderful. And one didn't have to have it in a linear, logical, structured fashion. Now, we've talked about Carol Hinderly, and we should mention two other dominant personalities. One, of course, certainly was Mary, his wife, who was a Greek scholar, and in her quiet way became a stabilizer and a ballast for him, and one who was always either correcting or suggesting and helping him, and she was indeed a helpmeet. But I was also going to make reference to the fact that during the first 2 years, when there were only college students there working, Bergstrand was in charge. And the thing about Bergie is his deep dedication to the place caused it to become a reality. I think he raised about $50,000 plus getting the students there, lived with them there, and it was, in a sense, his typical organized way, and the program tended to be organized and structured very, very strong. And he brought in Gil Berg, and Gil Berg was another very unique and interesting person who became mayor of the village and became kind of a frontispiece and one who made announcements and became kind of a symbol of the place. And when Carol Hinderly came, of course, there was hardly room for both pinwheels. So, I guess, what was that, Irene?
Another person really a couple that I think were very key, and I think they've been for many years, is Rudy and Doris Edmonds. Rudy contributed, I think, in my estimation, very much of the appreciation for the surroundings, of the history, the nature. He was constantly going off in those years exploring and coming back and telling what he had found. And Doris had so many interesting things to relate. And then the Lundholms were very key. And I remember the hospitality of the Lundholms and the Edmonds. And I remember the evenings when we would gather as some of the people involved in living in the village for a while. They were unforgettable evenings, and Gertrude had a special kind of apple dumpling, no, not that exactly, pancakes or whatever, Swedish dish that she would prepare. They were just marvelous.
And Gertrude Lundholm also had such an artistic flair and such a way of making things feel homey, and she would just take what was there in the village and make these lovely little baskets of flowers and just give a feel of home by how she...
And talking about personalities, I'm thinking again of Darrell Lundby, because in 1964 and 65, Darrell was the development director at the village, and he was doing his internship with Carol Hinderly at that time. Isn't that right? And Darrell really did a great job. He was traveling all over the country in his Chevy, I remember, in those days. And he'd stop in at our place in St. Louis Park once in a while when he was out on the road in those days. But he connected with a lot of people, created a lot of interest, raised some money. And again, as Doris said a while ago, he's one who really got us interested in keeping coming to the village, along with Mert Strumman, because you always plugged in our work, Mert, so that we could go out there and do youth counseling seminars and all kinds of things of that nature.
One of the stabilizing factors of the village was Bernd Ricke, a person who, as an active layman, demonstrated his very deep commitment to the church through his volunteer work. At one time, he estimated that one-third of his working time was given to the church, some type of volunteer service. And Holden Village and its leadership was one of the many things that he took on. He tended to be a very dignified and quiet person. And I could recall one instance where Irene and I were hiking up to Holden Lake. It was hot that day, and Irene had her blouse, her sweatshirt, and a sweater on top of all of that. And we were getting very close to Holden Lake, and approaching us was Vern Reike and Evelyn Sonic. And turned out that Irene was so hot that she thought she would take off her sweater before she came over to meet him. And so she grabbed quickly her sweater, sweatshirt, and didn't realize she also grabbed her blouse. And with a hoist, everything went across top of her head, and there she stood and became immobilized. So poor Evie had to come over with a and cover her up. And meanwhile, Irene made quite an impression on Vern Reike.
I see that our tape is just about up, so I think we'll have to sign off, and we can do that with the thought that probably the six of us wouldn't even be together tonight if it weren't for Holden Village, where we established our friendships and relationships in such depth.